Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Bibur.
Listeners are allowed to listen to women talk about Civ than guys talk about Civ. That's well known. It's a well known fact.
I see. I understand now that you started this fact.
Hello, listeners. It's the Mian Team. Welcome to episode 114. I am joined by Daniel Quick.
Hi, all.
Makalua.
It's too early on a Saturday.
QNL.
Hello, hello, hello.
And guest co-host Bibor, who will hopefully be joining us later.
So hate mail can be directed, too.
I get enough hate mail anyway. Don't worry about it.
I was going to say, you think there's not enough hate mail going to him already? Because, how can you play like this?
Oh, jeez.
I was actually talking about hate mail for the show.
Oh. We get hate mail? We get mail? Anymore?
Fury.
We haven't had any mail in a while, actually, but that must mean we're doing things right, because nobody writes to say you're doing a good job. Not too many people will do that.
Yeah.
But if we're screwing up, man, oh man, we'd never hear the end of it.
I'm still waiting for someone to send in hate mail regarding me, but accidentally send it to me as well. when I also attained that feat.
Yes, that has happened
in
the history of the show.
But unfortunately not for me.
Yes, it was not for you. We won't be any more specific than that. But in case people are wondering, where is that coming from? No, Phil just didn't make that up. That happened.
We love you, listeners, a lot.
They don't love you.
I don't ask. I don't ask for anything in return. It's just totally, you know.
Unreciprocated love?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Like it that way. I'm one of those type. Okay, let's go. Maybe we should move on to our next topic. Our first impressions with the patch for Civilization V that came out recently. Now that the game has been out for a little while and we've all had a chance to play it, played around a little bit with my impressions in terms of their buffing production, and the city placement can be pretty annoying now, but I think it was still a good change. I guess for me, the only disappointment that comes with the patch, because a lot of the things are big improvements, mind you, like the way that social policies were reworked, I really liked that. I like that they had a little bit more early game production available. I like that they're continuing to provide some vertical incentive in city development, which I was actually able to notice while playing. That's kind of novel. But you know, just some of the fundamental things just still aren't there, and I'm still referring to the controls. I'm still referring to the multiplayer, both the fact that it's hard to get in a lot of people into one game and the fact that you can't move after hitting and turn, which would break any competitive multiplayer completely. And it seems like some of what they're doing to push the human towards vertical expansion as opposed to horizontal is a little bit brute force, in my opinion. But nevertheless, I feel that in a lot of ways the patch went in the right direction. It's just that they really need to work up some of the fundamental flaws with the game, and the patch just didn't address them.
Well, as for me, I mean, I actually haven't really played the patch yet, so I can't say. I haven't really been playing Civilization 4, to tell you the truth. Sorry, Civilization 5. I've been playing Civilization 4. Yeah, not 5.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've actually been splitting time between the two. I would say that I've played Civilization 4 maybe a little bit more than Civ 5, but I do get some Civ 5 in.
I feel like I'm probably going to leave Civ 5 alone for like the next few months, because I feel like, I don't know, there's just going to be another patch, you know, and it's going to change things around, just like the last two patches did in terms of gameplay. And I mean, it's like playing a new game every time one comes out, you know?
That's true.
Strongly recommend Civilization 5 multiplayer. Enable that turn timer. Not because of, oh, you think someone is not going to finish their turn in time, because the turn timer does go, well, quite slowly. But the issue becomes then, if someone is having difficulty and just can't do anything, then at the very least, when the turn rolls over, that seems to resolve itself. You don't have to have an issue of someone where actually has to back out of the game and then get back into the game. And then, of course, when you've got the turn timer to address that issue, there is no pause capability, so that person may end up losing a turn or two while they're looking to get connected back, and who knows what the AI has done in your stead while you were gone. So, but that very least, enabling the turn timer is a bit of a workaround for that issue, along with Shift-Enter combination. It's also your friend, but if that doesn't work, then if you let the turn timer roll over, then, you know, you'll be... relatively speaking, good to go. A lot of things that came up with a recurring theme on the threads on Appleton, Civ Fanatics, We Play Civ, and on 2K is that, especially early on in the game, there isn't a lot to do. That if you're not in war, it's all about city management. And probably it takes some time, city management, but at some point, especially with production issues in terms of how long it's taking for things to build, you're waiting for units, you've got the one unit per tile, it's limiting what it is that you have to do on turns, and people are just going end turn, end turn, end turn, end turn, unless you happen to be in war, and then you get to play the unit dance. So some solutions that have come up, suggested solutions anyway, for instance, is adding more tile improvements, for instance, to give the player a better ability to specialize his cities, to make priorities and more choices. I'll also add to replayability. This comment from LZPRST on Poly. Give the players something to fiddle with aside from units and build queues. Give some terrain some flavor by limiting what improvements can be built there. Just something that helps those, quote, give the player something to do for 200 turns aside from fighting wars and waiting for build queues to complete, which I really hadn't thought about so much until actually after this patch for some reason.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's the right way to go if you're talking about getting the early game feel to go faster. And certainly I'd like to see a little bit more dynamic choices in terms of tile improvements. Certainly. Well, actually, no. Only one Civ game in the past has had that. Civ 5 has significantly more dynamic tile improvements than anything before 4. But anyway, that would help. But I don't think for the early turns we're talking about, you know, like your first 100, 150 turns. The really big problem is you pick train a worker and it's 15 turns. So now the only thing you're going to be doing city management-wise or anything is, like, literally anything on a given turn is maybe moving your exploring unit. And that's it. And that takes maybe like a second or two. You hit end turn. You actually wait longer in between turns than you do spending time playing the turn. So you're just mashing enter. And for somebody who plays RTS like me, I can probably hit enter 20 or 30 times sometimes between turns, which is just crazy. You know, just trying to get to the next turn after that. And I don't know the answer there. They had to scale down production for one unit per tile, or else even the humans would be fielding carpets of doom. And believe me, that is a cumbersome thing that you would not want any part of. That would be a nightmare. But, and, you know, the result of doing that, of reducing production in general, because of one unit per tile, is that you have these long wait turns early in the game. You know, maybe introduce a mechanic where you can just get starts underway much more quickly. I don't know the right answer there. Yeah, maybe a zoom forward feature, maybe advanced starts of some kind that are like workable
make
as a part of the default
game. As compared to units.
I'm running into problems with that with balance, though. If you make buildings cheaper, like the buildings, I know Firaxis is pretty bad fundamentally when it comes to balance, but they do at least try to make the building costs appropriate from a balance standpoint. And if you globally reduce their cost, it would get. I mean, you would have all kinds of new concerns and problems with that. Any little change you make like that, you have to think about the long term consequences of it. Because now it's cheaper for the AI to build those buildings, and then now you add some AI bonuses, and all of a sudden it gets tons and tons of buildings, and you have to balance their extra buildings with their ability to get maintenance costs. So you may have to rework the difficulty scaling to an extent. And, you know, maybe even rework military then, because the arrows will start progressing faster because you can build everything right away. So it's not an easy answer.
Yeah, when you're trying to work on that balance, trying to get it so that there's something meaningful and practical as well, something that Civilization Revolution does, is early on in the game, when you don't have something to do for a particular turn, what it'll do is it will just keep rolling the turns over automatically until there is actually a prompt for you to do something. So you could go from turn 5 to turn 10 until, hey, you know, your next warrior is available. Now what do you want to do with it to help make the to help make the turns go a little faster? And we say hello to Bibor. We're pronouncing that properly. Is that right?
Yep. Hello. It's spelled Bibor. It's a Hungarian name, but I'm living in Croatia, so it's Bibor.
Okay. All right.
Well, I have something to add about the multiplayer, although I didn't play it, but I played a lot of multiplayer games. And considering this is Civ we're talking about, this is not an RTS, maybe some kind of an advanced empire management could be done. For example, that you could queue up some things like social policy choices or building choices or unit choices so that you can actually prep for those few, I don't know, 50 turns, prep your empire for future development. So you can, you know, skip those things later when you're in combat.
Oh man, that's something I've been griping for a long time, is the, you can actually queue up units and buildings right now. The problem is the interface to do it is a little sloppy. You have to click into the city, and then like you get like prompted to choose units or buildings on the left. You actually have to hit escape to get out of that. You have to already be building a unit, otherwise you can't queue anything up. And now once you're already building a unit, you have to click a tiny little box that says show queue, and only then can you add a unit. And you have to hit add unit and click one more, add unit, click one more. There's no hotkeys for any of this either. So it takes several times the amount of inputs as it took in Civ 4, but you can at least do that. Unfortunately, you can't queue social policies. And there's a lot of things that there aren't hotkeys for, and you're right. And when you're playing something in multiplayer and you have a turn timer, having those types of control options available and working, it would be really beneficial. I mean, even Civ 4 suffered from that because you'd have, like, control click not work, and you have 10 seconds left in the turn, and now you have to click all your units individually instead of all at once. Well, Civ 5 has that problem, too, in that a lot of hotkeys and such don't even exist. So that is an issue also, but right now, it's just it takes such a huge backseat to the whole double moving problem with being unable to move after end turn and all the problems that causes. And there's no like built-in mechanic, at least I didn't see anything saying about it in the patch, like there was in the previous game, where if you moved a unit within the last 8 seconds of the previous turn ending, you could not instantly move that unit on the following turn. So I would really like to see that back in the game, too. Is right now there are no restrictions on double moving, essentially.
Well, I don't know. Maybe implementing multiplayer for Civ is generally a bad idea with, because you know they're not focusing on it properly. I mean, it could be done, but then it would require the game to be actually built from start with a decent multiplayer, and all the buildings and units and all the choices should reflect the fact that it's built for multiplayer.
There are some things, I don't know. Like, you can make a pretty good single-player game that translates well to multiplayer. The problem is there's so few things in either of the games that are balanced. But even so, you can get around a lot of that in multiplayer. But when you come to just the connection issues, I guess, and the control issues, that's something that you really do need to look at from the start. And it certainly does not seem like that was done for Civ 5. Certainly, it just doesn't seem like it was playtested thoroughly.
Well, I don't know. For example, take Fallout New Vegas. Can you imagine it being for multiplayer? I mean, it's
yes,
completely...
it would be awesome.
or the Oblivion, for example. It's the same type. I mean, I played World of Warcraft, and it's tuned for multiplayer, and most of those choices they made for balancing stuff would probably be obsolete in a single player game.
Yeah, that's true, especially when you involve bonuses, because when you involve bonuses that are only applied to some sides, like you do to an AI in single player, it really changes the value of what's good in a game versus isn't when you're playing against humans. I have not played much competitive Civ 5 multiplayer because of the double moving issue, but for example, in Civ 4, something you wouldn't even use against the AI ever, like Guerrilla 2 Longbows. Who uses that offensively against an AI on high levels? You never see that. But in multiplayer, if you're not prepared for something like that, you can have like a squadron of just 4 or 5 longbows in your territory that essentially fight at the strength of grenadiers and threaten multiple cities. And you can easily get cities razed if you're not careful. Or, you know, they'll fork you so badly and you get your resources pillaged, you can't improve anything, and you're done. You lose from something that you don't even see in single player. You wouldn't even consider doing it for the most part. So, yeah, it is hard to balance a game that's designed around single player or multiplayer to function well in the other capacity. But, you know, we're not really asking for that. I mean, maybe some players are, but we just want an experience that works, I think. Right now, that's a big problem in multiplayer, is just the amount of waiting you have to do, the amount of things where you try to do something and it doesn't happen, or, you know, you feel like that issue with just not being able to end turn because you're being prompted to choose production. It's stuff like that that really drags it, especially if you're not even playing competitively. If you're just trying to play a friendly co-op game, you know, like, there's nothing inherently about Civ where that wouldn't be possible to be enjoyable. Certainly in the past it has been.
As far as, I agree, as far as maybe a little bit more now on the single player experience, after playing Civ 5 after this patch, I was trying to figure out, has the AI gotten smarter or have I gotten more stunned? Because I was finding myself doing things, approaching things, diplomacy and war. It seemed to be that the AI was actually doing a better job of not anticipating necessarily what I was doing, but being a bit more proactive as opposed to reactive, where in addition to, you know, like being denounced, seeing more like we talked before about when that was introduced, that it's kind of like, this is a bit of a red alert that you need to be watching, you know, what the heck is going on. And that would seem to be quickly fall for me after that. There was a declaration of war, and there was a meaningful invasion force. In other words, okay, this is a substantial force that, you know, it's going to take, it's going to use Civ 5 military advisor's word, you know, it's going to test our mettle, because it's not always just about in war, particularly now with one unit per tile, in terms of, okay, how is your strength as compared to somebody else? It's where is your force right now? Do you have it concentrated in one area or the other, and how does that compare to the force that is coming in against you? Because if you can't take that, you can't defend yourself, and they start taking cities, then they can start to get on a bit of a snowball effect and rolling. But also conversely, if I find that they're in trouble, we don't have the issue of, you know, Civ 4, we're doing fine on our own, when they're about to die, that if you actually contact them, they may actually even contact you, which was a nice surprise to see. But if you contact them, they seem to recognize just how screwed they are and try to offer you something that seems to be reasonable in the circumstance, enough to get you to say, okay, yes, let's end the war. You may start it up right again as soon as you can after that, but...
Yeah, in my opinion, sometimes they're still offering too much. It's not quite as bad as the quote-unquote rage quitting that was going on by the AI right at release. But in my Horse Archer, not Horse Archer, I love Horse Archers and Civ 4s. It can take me a while to say Horseman. But yeah, in my Horseman attack, I killed so many Flatland units that the AI was willing to give me 3 cities. It's like, okay, that's everything but your capital. Like, what's this? Essentially, you're like letting me take the war and win the war before or even have to finish the fight, so to speak. It's kind of the opposite of the refusal to capitulate problem in Civilization IV in that regard. Now, as for the AI tactically, the patch notes on that are vague, and the in-game implications of it are vague. Certainly, it seems to have improved over time from like release to now, but you know, what exactly was changed? How is it fighting better? I don't know. And obviously, if you play Wars intelligently, you can still absolutely smoke AI with even units. There's no doubt about that. But it does seem to do slightly less completely idiotic things. So it does employ it a little bit less. And, you know, from an actual AI performance standpoint, I would say that that's one of my smallest, like, I don't really have a gripe with that in the game compared to its other issues. Like, it just doesn't bother me. You're always going to have some AI limitations, but compared to the other things, it's just a lower priority, in my opinion. And I think a lot of the things that are helping the AI right now is that it just doesn't permalock itself into denouncement implosion, because that was always an issue when they were permanent. If that started going, it could keep going.
At the same time, in single player, I found that if you're on a roll militaristically, then try to stay on that roll, because I've been in situations a couple of times, so maybe part of it's the map type, and maybe not, the Four Corners map. specifically where I've gone and I've taken out the AI that's in my corner. And after doing that, I decide, okay, it's time to build up. It's time to improve the technology and then upgrade those units. Now work on some infrastructure while another AI is absolutely running away with it. But also, for the first time as a result of that, I was actually thinking about, okay, how can I win this game non-militaristically, which of course has been a common complaint that, especially in single player, I got to win by military, or, you know, I might as well just, you know, pack up and leave unless I choose, you know, always peace or something like that. And there's nothing like getting to, I think I'm in the Renaissance, what's after Renaissance? Industrial? Getting to the Industrial Age and talking to Augustus Caesar of Rome, seeing that he has control of about 40% of the map. There are four civs left. There were, I think, seven of us at the start. And I'm looking at not only the number of cities, but I'm looking at how much gold he has, which he's banked like 5,000 gold, and he's making almost 500 gold a turn. And he's taking out city-states left, right, and center, and so now I'm thinking, okay, all I need is to have a military that is going to at least, you know, defer, you know, be a defensive military, but also, you know, when he contacts me and he says, hey, you want to declare war on this person? I have no interest in going after them, but I don't have to, actively contribute to the war. I'm just like, yeah, sure, by all means, you know, go pick on somebody else. Which, of course, yes, means that they're going to be more powerful militaristically, but my goal is to have him take everybody else out before he turns on me. But during this time, I'm actually pushing for a... this is actually hard to say a little bit. A cultural victory.
You mean that victory condition that when you host in Civ 4, you always disable?
Well, yeah, I did disable.
Yeah, but the Apostolic Palace is okay with...
Yeah, somehow.
But that's about the hammers, though. That's...
Single most broken wonder ever designed in any Civilization game. Yes, I'll go that far. And you leave it on. Oh, man.
Well, maybe if you don't count the Elf Centauri secret projects.
No, AP is an instant I win if you build it in a minority religion. You build it, you win. On deity, doesn't matter, you win.
It's just the extra hammers.
Yep.
Yeah, hammers, right. But it has nothing to do with spreading this minority religion to only one AI, then spreading it to one city of each remaining AI and getting an instant win. Nope, nothing to do with that.
Yeah, no, not broken at all.
No.
Not why Dan loves it at all.
Yeah, I don't love it enough to complain that it's not in Civ 5, though, so, meh.
Yeah, if you get stuck in a situation like that in Civ 5, I don't see a lot of ways out other than culture, or letting them wipe out everybody else and then maybe doing, like, a suicide bum rush on their capital. Those are the only two things I can picture, because if they start snuffing everyone out, one of the things that can really keep you ahead in the game is research agreements, but that only works if there's people left alive, and it's the exact same thing with city-states and winning a diplomatic victory. That only works if there are enough city-states in existence to actually vote you winner. And, of course, if you get those massive AIs, they can sometimes outbid you as well. But the biggest threat is when they just get wiped out entirely, and then there's not a lot you can do other than liberate them and therefore go to war with the monster AI. And you're just not going to out-tech a monster AI that has, like, 40% of the world's land without the help of research agreements. And it's just too many cities, too much base research. They'll get you there. But culture is doable. Certainly. And if you know how to work Diplo in this game, you can probably avoid a declaration for the entire game in a lot of situations. So, cultures...
Well, one of the things that needs to be changed somehow is the fact that having an AI having a coastal capital is so broken most of the time.
Oops, I win.
In this scenario, if Caesar wipes out everybody else and he has a coastal capital, then he's done. I mean, you need four ships and two land troops to cap the capital.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's four corners, and I've had the region separated by mountains. So.
Oh, well, that'd be a little harder.
Yeah. But, so actually the water doesn't come into it at all. It didn't get into it so far at all that I eventually had to choose sailing before I could tech anything else. I mean, that's how, in that situation, how unimportant that technology was. And yes, you've mentioned that he's, I had a few city-states in my corner, cultural city-states, which really helped me early on with social policies, but now he's buying them up. The ones that he can't take out militaristically, he's buying up from me, but also in that game with the culture. And you mentioned I'm playing the diplomacy a little more in terms of, yeah, I got to watch the, you know, the, not only the denouncing, but the research agreements. I think on one turn I managed to get, I got three techs. I got like, I can't remember, it was gunpowder and like two other technologies on that same turn. And then other AIs, you know, they wanted me to declare on this massive AI, and I'm just like, no, I don't want to do that. But it was just kind of like, you know, do you want to join us? And I'm just like, no, not interested at this time. And then they, not only having enough gold, but even the strongest AI and all the other AIs are like, no, we're not interested in a research agreement. And I'm like, okay, well, what will make this deal work? Like, how much more gold do I have to give you? No, we're not interested in this. So that's when I started to say, okay, yeah, probably going for a space victory is not going to be practical. So let's just sit in my little corner here and go culture, 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 culture. Yes, let's build the Sistine Chapel. Yes, let's build monasteries. Yes, let's build. I was totally changing what I thought was going to be my victory condition at the start of the game, that I was changing it to culture. And now it's, you know, it's not like, oh, I wish I thought about this at the start of the game, but between the social policies that I do have, thanks to the city-state allying in part in culture and all of these buildings, and the fact that I've managed to play the diplomacy, which is essentially he doesn't particularly like me, but he, you know, dislikes everybody more. So it's actually working to my benefit. So I'm hoping now that I will be able to push out that culture victory before he decides to turn his attention to me. Although that said, you know, I do have to unlock five social policy trees before I can start building Utopia Project. And I've got one unlocked, and I'm about two-thirds of the way through two others. So it'll be an interesting timing issue, needless to say.
You better start counting your uranium resources.
I don't know about my uranium resources yet. Haven't quite got that far.
Happiness is a warm nuke.
But one of the other AIs has already built the Manhattan Project, so I'm just like, okay.
Hey, city states can't build that any longer, though, so that's nice.
That is nice.
What do they care about the consequences? Speaking of navies, for wiping out a capital, that's another thing that's really huge in multiplayer, on maps where you have civs on different continents, that you don't really have much of a consideration in single player, and that's true in both Civ 4 and 5. If you get dominated at sea by a human, you pretty much lost already. It's really amazing the difference between that and the AI, which will just, you know, in Civ 4 house all of its ships in one place, or it really doesn't use its navy in a concerted effort to take you out in either game. It's more interested in pillaging seafood, for example. Or whatever. But against a human, just dedicated efforts like that, and you can't hold on to any coastal cities. They'll just threaten everywhere at once.
Yeah, it's true. Even a small navy, like four or five ships, if they are decently placed, they can wreak havoc in the AI's lands, seriously.
Yeah, and like if you're a human versus human, then what do you do if somebody has those four or five ships and you have nothing? And, you know, like, if they're in front of your cities that are coastal, you're not going to be able to get out any meaningful quantity of ships because they're just locking you down now. And they can easily take your cities and, you know, maybe not hold them, although they'll start raising them and certainly do you a lot of economic damage.
Well, but
well, if you have any units embarked, they'll kill them, like, really, you know, really easily, right?
Yeah, the units that are not naval units don't do very well in naval combat, to say the least, as in, unless you're the Songhai, it's instant death. Yeah, the cities can bombard, but it's not particularly effective because the ships can just rotate out of range and heal. Or once you get into later eras, the ships can actually outrange cities. Some of them can. So that's really bad then. I think it's battleships.
I was thinking more about catapults and cannons and such. And even cities now, if you pick that policy in tradition now, cities can be really powerful. I mean, I had cities with over 100 strength.
Oh, yeah.
Even with health damage, that's insane amount of damage. And the artillery, especially if promoted for flat terrain, which also works for sea, it can kill a ship in like two shots maximum.
Yeah, that can be pretty obnoxious. But at best, then, you're just in a deadlock situation. Because, you know, any time you could kill the ship, it could just move out of range and heal. And you can only stack up, like, you know, maybe one ship in the city. And then after that,
ships cannot heal ships cannot heal outside of your own cultural borders. So.
Oh, really?
That's right.
That's useful. That's useful to know. They're pretty fast, though. You could probably just move them back to yours.
Well, yeah, but battleships are slow, and
battleships outrange, so battleship versus the Arty, you don't have to worry about the 100-strength city in that case.
Yeah, well, as far as the naval units are concerned, I think Civ 5 did a good, you know, a good balance of pros and cons for every type of unit, so that's okay.
I don't really have a problem with Navy in the game.
The worst part is that the AI does not know how to use them properly, these units. That's the main problem.
Yeah. That's always been the problem with naval stuff, though. And air combat, for that matter.
There's air combat in the game? That shows you how often I guess.
Five. Because the late games really drag on Civ 5 for me. But
oh, come on.
Like, the AI is very good at it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, for some reason, even the Air Force from, I don't know, from Panzer General was kind of sucky. I don't know why, really, because it was easier, actually, to micro for the AI than land units. I mean, you just have to click a tile, and it's done. So, no movement at all.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's the strategic level of consideration, and that's probably the hardest thing for the AI.
Yes, but even then, I mean, having a fighter already gives him a 6-tile sight radius, even if it doesn't see all the units, which it probably does. So.
Yeah, but how do you tell it what to prioritize to attack? You know, what's the most important thing to attack, and in what order, why?
Well, first you check if the enemy has any fighters, for example, or bombers. If he does, then you don't attack, and if he doesn't, I mean, you can see in every city how many airplanes there are. So I don't think that would be that difficult to code in, actually.
I don't know. People start gaming that stuff. Like, just as a small example, you say don't attack, but people get just enough then to prevent them from attacking at all and work around that. You know, just people game AI, man. You gotta be careful when you're programming AI.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it can be coded to take a certain risk. I mean, like they do in diplomacy or any other things, they can be coded to take risks or not to take risks, for example.
That's true. They can be. But it is a balance.
We can actually do a segue into this.
Speaking of unreciprocated love, top 10 unique units.
Oh, you want to jump ahead to the top 10 unique units? Ah, okay.
Because we know Dan has a top 10 list that he's just dying to share with us.
talking about top 10 unique units here, and I will copy and paste the address or URL for the geeks out there. Oh, I'm sorry, which is actually everybody, but anyway. Top 10 unique units in Civ 5. Now, unlike some other top lists that we have done in the past, and by we, I mean me, rather than talking about, okay, let's talk about the top 10 or the top whatever for the entire game, which top lists are always really difficult, I thought this time let's approach it by era. And even then, that can be difficult, but at least we're putting it on a bit more of a smaller scale, and on this episode, we will look at the first three eras. We will look at the ancient era. We will look at the classical and medieval. Did I get those names right?
Yeah.
You did.
Oh, good. Woohoo! This thread was started late last year by C. Berry, so I'm not really going... There really wasn't that much detailed discussion anyway, but it's a little dated, and things have changed in the game since then. Maybe just a little bit. But he's curious to hear what they are for you. So let's start with the ancient era. What I'm going to do is in the past I've talked about, okay, here's say there are five in the ancient era, five unique units in the ancient era. Here's number five. And then I start talking about all of the things that you can read in the Civilpedia, for example, or on, you know, strategy articles on Civ fan sites. So I'm just going to do the list. I'm going to give the name, what it replaces, and what the technology you need, very simple stuff. go through the list, and then I will decide which one or ones of my fellow co-hosts want to roast, I mean discuss with me, and we'll go from there. So number five, replacing the Chariot Archer, the Indian War Elephant comes with the wheel. Number four, also coming with the wheel and replacing the Chariot Archer, is the Egyptian War Chariot. Number three, replacing the Spearman at Bronzeworking, is the Greek Hoplite. Also replacing the Spearman, also at Bronzeworking. Number two, the Persian Immortal. And number one, which you get right away as it replaces the warrior, the Aztec Jaguar. Let the feeding frenzy begin, or the roasting, I guess.
There's some usable stuff in there. It's hard to put a top one, though.
I think the best unit isn't on the list. It's the Babylonian Bowman.
Ah.
Oh, I guess I should have qualified this, that I wasn't looking so much at the DLC stuff. The only one that I actually included on the list because it was free was Mongolia. I should have qualified that from the beginning, just so that way if you have Civilization V, then you can relate to these. I wasn't talking about unique units for downloadable content sips. Oops.
Although since it's been mentioned, you might as well go ahead and say what the advantages of the bowmen are then.
Yeah, go ahead there, Bibor. We'll start with that one, which is in Ancient Era, but not on my direct list here.
Okay, well, it has only one thing. It has strength 9 instead of strength 6 for the same hammer cost. So it makes it almost as powerful as a horseman and slightly less powerful than a swordsman. And it can be used for attacking cities as well as units, and it helps Babylon immensely at start.
Also, if you have that much of a base strength increase, things that would ordinarily own you because of your weak defensive abilities would struggle a little bit now. And that's pretty huge as well. So yeah,
certainly. Indeed, it benefits more from great generals and all the stuff that boosts the base attack or defense values.
Not quite as good as like a Civ 5 equivalent of the Praetorian, but still good, certainly.
Yep.
I do like the Jaguar Warrior, not to be used directly necessarily, but it carries its upgrades, and that can be quite useful in a lot of situations.
Yeah, so it's true that the Jaguar Warrior costs a little more than the standard Warrior, 60 instead of 40, but it's the plus 50% jungle combat that is pretty impressive, and you'll probably find maybe it's a little more powerful in single player because maybe the AI isn't as good as clearing tiles around their cities. Gee, they never had that issue in any previous Civ game. You're able to take advantage of that.
It's readily available right away, though, and that's an advantage as well.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I don't think many maps have enough jungles, actually, to merit the Jaguar bonus.
I thought they had a secondary effect, did they not?
Yes, they do heal 2 hit points if they kill an enemy.
That's right. That's what I was thinking about. And that carries over, too. So if you want to carry that into a more advanced war in Classical or later, you can certainly start rolling with that ability. Maybe not as good as the Janissaries version, but certainly it has its uses if you're willing to upgrade them.
Since we started at the number one, we'll just mention here back at number two, the Persian Immortal, replacing the Spearman. It's combat 8 as compared to combat 7. And so you're thinking, but it also with the Jaguar, has special healing ability. The Persian Immortal heals at the double rate.
Yeah, that's useful too. I mean, none of these are game breakers, but they're very handy. I would say the Bowman is clearly ahead of those two. Clearly ahead, but they're both useful as well. And so is the Hoplite, for that matter.
Yep, right behind it. 70 hammers, combat 9. Not healing at the double rate, but combat 9 slightly ahead of the Persian Immortal. So if you wanted to say, oh, Dan, I'd invert those two. There is the healing at the double rate of the Persian Immortal, but I might not disagree too terribly with you.
Hoplites can get some safe attacks on cities early, and certainly they can press an advantage against people who are running only spears. So they do have that.
Both the Immortal and the Hoplite can be used as a swordsman substitute until you can grab some iron, and they can definitely take cities which are in the 6 or 7 strengths ballpark at that time.
If you get a great general, you can attack cities that are like 10 or 11. maybe a little bit higher. I wouldn't go too much higher because then you start getting costly, but most things pre-walls for a lot of the BC era, they are effective with a great general. And you can, if you're playing against a reasonably high level AI that has some units out, you can GG farm them for that. So that's a possibility as well. Like, take your first city, kill a bunch of units, get your great general, bring that guy into the fray, and just keep moving from there.
Yeah, maybe, but the AI likes to rush by archers now, so it can become really painful to delay the initial conquests, actually. I mean,
maybe.
Farming is okay, yes, but you're better pay off if you take the first city first.
Certainly, but you can still hunt down units and do everything you can to get your great general points as well. I would certainly not advocate delaying taking the city. That would be a little silly to do. But if they have any units around, just kill them right away. Try to get that great general.
And then we've got the Egyptian War Chariot was at 4 and the Indian War Elephant at number 5. Unlike the chariot archer that they replace, it's true that you do not need a horse, but when you're talking about, no defensive bonuses and the penalty attacking cities, couldn't rank them as high as 1, 2, or 3, but why Egyptian War Chariot over the Indian War Elephant? Well, Egyptian War Chariot has 5 movement as compared to 3, so that is beneficial.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put the War Chariot above the Elephant, though, because the War Chariot has one more penalty, and that's attacking into rough terrain, which the Elephant, I think, doesn't have. So.
Oh, I thought it did.
Well, maybe it does, but still, the Elephant has a higher attack strength. I think it's 8. And that can be used to attack cities, I think, better than the War Chariot. The 5 movement rate is nice, but realistically, you don't have enough roads at that time, and there are too many rivers without bridges to actually benefit from the ability, except if you play in a really flat map.
Yeah, I think I would put the Elephants ahead as well, actually, just because they're a little bit more viable in their offensive role. And you, the War Chariots of 5 make you miss the War Chariots of 4. Because the War Chariots in 4 were like one of the top unique units in the game, and that's just nowhere near the case any longer in Civ 5.
All right, I'm going to still keep my ranking the way it is, but I hear what you're saying. So then that takes us to Classical. There are 4. Number 4, Roman Ballista, Catapult Replacement, needing iron and available at Mathematics. Number 3, the Iroquois Mohawk Warrior, Swordsman Replacement, needing iron working and, of course, iron. Number 2, Roman Legion, same, also Swordsman Replacement, iron working and iron. And number 1, your Greek Companion Cavalry, available to horseback riding and requiring horse.
Pre-patch Companion Cavalry.
Well, it's still good.
Yeah, certainly. But man, pre-patch. Yeesh. God.
I think cavalry is up there.
Yeah, it's got great generals. Are produced more quickly with these guys. 5 movement can move after attacking.
They are certainly still good, and I don't know. I might put them best in this particular era, maybe. But they're not. They're just not what they were pre-patch, where they were pretty much an I win choice.
I would put actually ballistas at the top on this list. I know they require iron, which is scarce, but they are slightly less powerful than their upgrades, which are trebuchets. And I mean, the attack strength difference is minimal, and you get them basically with, just picking a few first stacks. So, and I think, yes, the Companion Cavalry is the second strongest of these 4, definitely, because it can still take cities on its own at this time, except if the cities have walls. And even if they don't, you will get the Great General soon enough, and their base strength is still high enough to benefit from the Great General, and then they can take cities again, even with walls.
Yeah, I don't know. Ballistas could suffer from they're slower, just in general, when they're moving through enemy territory. And I mean both a combination of simple moving to position them and use them properly, but also just the fact that wars take longer when you start involving siege, move into place, set up, bombard a few turns, then attack the city, whereas opposed to something where you have tremendous amounts of movement point and can really strike from outside the city's range and after that move to a point where you're maybe not all that vulnerable to counterattack as well. And then you give room for even more follow-up attackers. And I would probably, ballistas are good too, but I would struggle to put anything ahead of the companion cavalry in this era. It's hard, though.
I think it largely depends on the map, because on my maps that I usually play, there's so few open terrain, especially at start. I mean, it's mostly forest and hills. Very few flat terrain. And in this scenario, on these maps, I don't see the real benefit of having five movement, because it gets eaten up by all the rough terrain.
Well, you can still move across two rough terrain tiles and attack, though. And that's pretty brutal.
But then you can't withdraw, which is the main point of the companion cavalry. And yes, the are slower, but you can rush by them, and you can rush by two while you already prepared your swords. And it's not that much slower. I mean, sure, on a huge map, definitely companion cavalry is going to be faster. But on a standard or small map, I don't see, being slowed down by
siege. I don't know. Especially... And this is with the new patch. Actually, horse units in general got a buff because there's more space between cities. All you really need is like one or two open terrain things near a city. Because what happens then is you move into position, you hit with your first wave of companion cavalry, which are closer, and you hit with like two or three of them at once on the city, and pull them back, and then hit with a second wave. And for anything but the most defensively set up cities, you have it. You just took the city on that turn. And then you just heal up and move on to the next one. And they're really quick hits, too. Not to mention they're much better field fighters. And they're really everything in that era struggles to deal with them in the field. And with the exception of maybe like hoplites or something, which have the higher base strength, just because they can move into position and, get like a, flanking bonus or a double flanking bonus. And it's basically just surrounding and pounding on things. And again, with the extra city spacing, that really helps them a lot. Because now even in enemy territory, very frequently you can get those surrounds for the extra combat bonuses that really puts you over the top. And even with normal horse, and you can do that to some extent, with that one extra movement and the extra base strength, that's pretty crazy.
Well, if the ballista didn't require iron, because I'm thinking about iron, I'm thinking about, my swordsman and then up to long swordsman. If I want siege capability, I'm going to be bringing in, I'll have my archers and whatever comes right after them.
Archers are pretty sad against cities, though. Well, stock archers. We're not talking about the bowmen here.
No. Yes, I'm talking about using... Yes, I'm not talking about the archers for the cities, but archers for... which I know is the direct benefit of the ballista, because it has plus 30% bonuses against cities. But for the cities themselves, I'd rather have my stronger units, the long swordsmen, and hopefully also a great general, and then you having the archers to help pick things off, especially in flat terrain, but not just... necessarily, along with mounted units as well. If they got rid of the iron requirement, I might be more inclined. I'd rank ballista higher.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in my second game, I think it was second on my YouTube channel. I was fighting against Babylon, and Babylon was like 35 strength, I think, in the classical age. So there is no way in hell I could have taken that with just bowmen and archers and swordsmen. It was impossible. Even with the ballista, it took a few turns to bring the walls down. I think it largely depends on what the opponent has as social policies as well, and if it built walls or not. Definitely, it can change stuff.
Also, it's garrisoned in the city even makes a difference, because if they have something that can really punish you coming out of the city... I'm not talking about the city's raw strength itself, but say they have like a good archer unit in it or something like that, that's really just crushing your units. Sitting there to bombard with any type of siege weapon is a serious liability to your attackers. And whereas the mounted can strike from outside the range of such nonsense. So, but then again, if you don't have that, you're probably going to, your siege will function a little bit more effectively then, especially against those strong cities, because then you actually can wear them down. Like, there's no way you could attack a 35 strength city with a companion cavalry. Or you could, but only if you want to lose your unit. It would probably just die instantly. Whereas the ballistas give you a chance. But then you trade that off for some early game capabilities where you can just roll things. So there's some also style there as well.
There's also the fact that the companion cavalry bonus of its high strength does not go. It's not transferred to the knights, while the ballistas can serve you for quite a long time. You can use them actually until cannons because they are not that much weaker than the ballistas. I mean the trebuchets.
Yeah, there's certainly a longer window there.
So if you're planning for a really long warmonger game, then probably investing into early siege is a good idea because that bonus, that extra bonus that the classical siege units get, do transfer to cannons. While if you build the cannons, they don't get that bonus. So on the long run, having four or five very early siege units that could survive until industrial means that you will have a double attack artillery, most definitely.
And then that takes us to medieval. I had to think about that for a moment. There are seven here, and I don't know about, again, downloadable content sieves, if that brings into play any here. Although, actually, on this list, I am including the Mongolian, because this is the downloadable content sieve that that is free. So starting at number seven, Siam Narsuan's Elephant. Am I pronouncing that properly? I don't know. Knight replacement at Chivalry. And number six, the Arabian Camel Archer, also at Chivalry. Number five, the Songhai, Mendicalu Cavalry. Maybe I'm a little closer on that. Number four, the Chinese Chukonu. I practiced that beforehand and I failed. Available at Machinery. That was number four, right? All right, number three, the Mongolian Keshik. Knight replacement, also available at Chivalry. Recurring theme here for unit replacement. number two, the Japanese Samurai, long swordsman replacement. And number one, your crossbowman replacement, the English longbowman.
What happened to the pikeman replacement from Germany?
Landsknecht.
Yeah, isn't that medieval?
Yes, it is.
I'm pretty sure they're not DLC.
Yeah, no, it's not. Oh, shit. Here it is in my notes. Oh, crap. I see why I missed it. I copy and pasted, but I didn't highlight it properly when I was actually doing the number ranking. Okay. Let me see. I will. Oh, yeah, that's the pikeman replacement, right? What did I say was number? What did I have at the bottom of the list? Oh, the Nursurian elephant. I guess if I had to give it a number, I wouldn't. It certainly wouldn't displace one, two, or three. I don't know if I'd put it at four, but that's as high as I would put it.
From personal experience, I can tell you that the Nesurian's elephants kill Landsknechts pretty easily.
Everything does. Their only advantage is their cost, but in this game, it's all about the quality of your units, in my opinion, rather than being able to spam something out. Because you can only hit any one area with so many units. And these guys are just kind of junk compared to something that has higher strength and can actually do real damage.
Yep. They're good only if you bulb or somehow slingshot to civil service early, very early.
All right, let's put them in the beat.
If you get there like mid-BCs, fine. I mean, essentially, they're like a spear UU then. You spam them out and start wrecking. But, yeah, if you're actually talking about era-appropriate warfare, although that's not necessarily the best way to rank a unique unit. But, yeah, even there, I don't feel like they're particularly special. I mean, you could run into trouble fighting against people with using swords.
Yeah, true.
That just tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, the biggest problem of very cheap units is that you need to spam them out all the time, and if you're doing that, that means you're not building anything else.
Man, they just don't actually do much for their cost. Like, the game really biases quality units over spam. It really does. Even more so than Civ 4 did.
So, should we talk about the longbowmen then? My only grudge is that the longbowman doesn't upgrade to artillery.
How broken of a unique unit do you want, though?
Because they can get to, you know, double a tank and extra range really quickly.
There's a reason when I first started playing Civ 5 and I had the English in my first game, I started calling them murder bows.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing like the 3-hex range. As compared to 2.
Yeah, I do have the AI uses it properly, so it must be good.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The best strategy titles offer complex and engaging formats that deliver hours of gaming satisfaction to huge armies of loyal fans. Here are the nominees.
Strategy. StarCraft II, Wings of Liberty. Fallout New Vegas. Civilization V, Plants vs. Zombies, XBLA. FIFA Manager 11. Napoleon Total War.
The BAFTA is awarded to...
Ooh, can't get it out.
Civilization V, well done! Fantastic!
BAFTA itself posted that video. Game of the Year, no, did not go to Civilization V. It went to Mass Effect.
Mass Effect 2, you mean, right?
I was going to say.
Confused.
Oh, it could be Mass Effect 2. I don't know.
Speaking of confused, what's Fallout New Vegas doing in strategy?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some minor strategy applications in the game.
Yeah, but it's in there with things like Total War and Civ and StarCraft.
Yeah, I don't know that I would mark it as the same genre. That's kind of silly.
Oh, okay, I was hoping some Fallout New Vegas players, of whom I know at least one person on the call is, would be able to enlighten me, but...
It's strategic if you play hardcore and you have to think about when you sleep and eat, and even then it's not really that strategic. Unless you're talking about the strategy of where do I perch that the death claws won't come after me. I mean, I don't know.
Strategy about sleeping and eating. Are we talking about in-game, or are we talking about this real-life thing?
Yeah, why isn't real life nominated for strategy?
Hey, so strategy of sleeping and eating is also a big consideration when playing Civilization, for that matter. And sometimes those things can really get in the way.
Yeah, and combining the two, well...
Eating somewhat, sleeping, sometimes you get cortitis from that on your face. So you do have to be careful when sleeping while playing Civilization.
Yes, I love having QWERTY up on top of my head.
All right, well, thanks everyone for tuning in to episode 114 of Polycast. And I will now hand it over, now that I've said that, hand it over to the person who we actually arranged to do the closing. Oops. You'd much rather hear from this person anyway.
Oh, Bettina, you've already closed so perfectly. Why do I need to do anything else?
But I haven't reintroduced everybody, and I have a hard enough time remembering my own name, so I think you better...
Yeah, right. And there are monkeys flying around in here. I think there's monkeys flying around in here. Anyway, you've been listening to episode 114 of Polycast. I'm Makalua, and with me today was Dan Quick.
As zany as ever.
The man team.
So what would a finishing move be in Mortal Kombat anyway?
Lisa Bang, QMNL.
Good evening.
And Bibor.
Hello, hello. Just a second. I'm a little bit confused. I thought the recording is in an hour and a half.
No,
we're live.
You're live right now.
Oh, wow.
Hello to all the listeners, yes.
Record date March 19th, 2011. BAFTA 2011 Gaming Award Winners Club, copyright British Academy of Film and Television Arts.
Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.